Welcome back to the episode 13 of the Fostering Financial Victories podcast. I am joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Bill Craig. He is going to share with us some feedback on things that he has learned over the last 35 or 40 years. So you got to retire early recently.
And have been
working harder than you ever have, right?
Harder. Honey, do less keeps going.
Okay. So Bill worked 40 years with Internal Medicine Associates here in Greenville.
Yes.
So native of Greenville, did some training in Alaska, in Charleston, so kind of all over. So what I wanted to just walk through with the folks today is just kind of things that you may have picked up over the last 35 or 40 years. Hopefully give some feedback so folks can kind of learn from it.
Okay,
So when did you become kind of tuned in, like kind of think back when you first started working to, all right, I need to start paying attention to finances or kind of learn about some of this in more detail than others. Like what was the moment that kind of got you tuned into it?
Probably the first was when I bought my first stock in 1970, and that was called Offshore Logistics. I don't remember what I paid for it, what I sold it for, but it did help me buy my first car.
So 1970. So that's when they actually issued you the stock.
Issued the stock, a stock certificate.
Right.
An actual, I've had some, I don't know what I did with some of them, but some of them have gone belly up, others haven't.
So when you did that, you must have been in schooling of some kind.
Starting med school.
Okay, so what kind of got you into thinking, hey, I'm going to go buy some, how'd you pick it?
Yeah, my father just suggested that. He wasn't a big stock picker, wasn't a big businessman. He was a physician also.
But okay.
He just, he suggested that, and I looked at it and said, okay, I'll try it, and it worked. So after that, I started dabbling in it.
Okay. So when you started to go through training and kind of coming into the workforce at that point, obviously very different than today from what we were seeing financially back then. So you and I were talking before we started, you know, interest rates were crazy expensive high versus right now, it's kind of all-time lows. If you can go back in time and think about, you know, the effect of interest on what you were doing or also on what you were saving, kind of giving some feedback on what you experienced there.
Yeah, the biggest thing I remember is moving to Greenville in 79 during the Carter era, and interest rates then were 15% to 16%, and we were trying to decide whether to buy a house or rent to avoid the high interest rates. You know, that was a tough time. Didn't have any money to invest at that time, and even borrowed from my life insurance policy to put a down payment on a house.
Interesting.
So starting from scratch. But again, working as a physician for 40 years, was able to gradually accumulate some funds.
So kind of building into what people are looking at today, kind of the habits of day-to-day life and not getting drawn into all the, I don't know, the turmoil that you see in the markets and the economy. Can you go back and think, was there a habit that you started, and when was that just kind of got you off the ground when it got kind of that systematic savings world?
Well, I would say I had benefits and negatives. So in 87, before the 87 crash, I had invested in five or six different stocks and decided to put some stop losses in there. And I remember on a Wednesday, the week before Black Friday, one of those clicked off. And the next Thursday, it was up a little bit, and I was kicking myself. I said, you know, I shouldn't have done that. And then Black Friday hit, and the bottom just dropped out of the market. And within 2 weeks, I bought back all the stocks that I had previously, or within a month's time, because I think you have to wait 4 weeks,
right?
And wrote them back up. So that was a positive lesson I learned, but unfortunately I didn't carry that on into the future. So, you know, I think learning to take your gains and not avoid losses is the name of the game, really. But again, I didn't apply that lesson as well as I should have going forward.
I got you. So when you saw that take place and kind of, I would assume that the greed aspect kind of kicked in when you saw it pop back up and the thought of, hey, I shouldn't have sold it so fast, right?
Yeah, but that was, again, we're talking about a week's period of time.
Right.
And so I think, you know, in investing, you have to be patient and consistent. And so those, if you can apply those two qualities and take some of the emotion out of it, you know, I knew that the stocks I had were good stocks. I knew that they would probably come back, but buying them cheaper than I purchased them originally, you know, was sounded like a good deal.
Sounds like everything's on sale, right?
It was on sale.
Yeah. But you had to get over the emotion of jumping into essentially what looked like a fire pit at that time.
And I've heard the quote, and everybody else has too, Warren Buffett's, you know, be cautious when people are greedy and be greedy when people are cautious. So I guess I was thinking it was a good time to be greedy.
That guy's been pretty successful.
He has been.
He's been pretty good. Yeah, probably good advice to take. Okay, so that aha moment of when you started saving, kind of getting involved in finance, was that it, or was it before that that kind of got you off the ground?
That was probably it. The biggest gains I had though were going forward into the 90s. So I was subscribed to a newsletter that was into the high tech world, and owned some great companies that made great profits. Some of them went bankrupt, WorldCom. Some of them had great gains, JD Uniphase. So, you know, being invested in that sort of internet or telecommunication type stuff early, I think was a good idea. But unfortunately, riding it up in the late 90s and I didn't have the stop losses in there and was more concerned about the tax consequences of the gains and wrote them back down. So I didn't apply what I had learned decades before in that particular scenario.
Is there something that you look back on that you say, man, I really wish, you know, 35 years ago, I wish I'd have done more of this, or I wish I wouldn't have done the other?
That's easy. Back 30 years ago, I owned a couple of startup stocks called Apple and Omgen. I sold those. If I had purchased them and held, I might have retired at 35 years rather than 40 years of medicine. But that's an easy.
That's the easy one, huh?
Yeah. But Omgen, when I had it, I rode it through two or three splits. And made a good enough profit to put my kids through college.
Very good, very good. Yeah. So are your children very, very dialed into this type of stuff as well, like you are, or did they discover it on their own?
They haven't reached the point of having enough assets to start throwing it out.
Gotcha.
I've encouraged them, and really when you're investing, you need to have your safety net in place first, a good 3 to 6 months of living expenses that you have safe and secure before you might consider venturing out into stocks, just from a financial viewpoint.
So this is a kind of a discussion going back to folks who may be just getting started, thinking about compounding interest. So, you know, the eighth wonder of the world is what, you know, a lot of people would term that as. So when you start thinking about how can you take advantage of it early, even though you may not be in a position where, you know, a lot of folks, when they're getting out of school, they've got a substantial amount of student loan debt or something that is holding them back a little bit. What are some thoughts that you have on how could they kind of position themselves, even if it's a little bit, you know, just starting something?
Yeah, I can think of two great examples. When I first came to Greenville, again, I borrowed from a life insurance policy to put a down payment on a house. I had a set income, a salary rather than a productivity. And I think it was 3 years to partnership. So after the first year, I was able to contribute to the 401k of the company's group. And I went to the head physician then. I said, I still have money I borrowed. I said, I don't want to spend money there. And he told me then, he said, you need to start now and start early. Which I did. So, you know, at the time you're putting away $2,000-$3,000 a year, but again, compounded annually over 40 years, that amount of money adds up.
It does.
The same thing is true with my daughter. She went to work for a car company. I'm blank on who it is right now, but she came home and she said, you know, they offer this 401k, but I'm not going to do that because I need the money. I said, you don't need it. And she was in tears. She was in tears.
That's not what she wanted daddy to tell
her. Didn't want to hear that. And so I had her contribute. And when she left, she had $7,000, you know, after 3 years. So, and that's money that she would have spent otherwise. So getting in early, son's doing the same thing, you know, with his company. He asked, you know, how much should I match? I said, there's no way in the world that you're going to have a guaranteed 100% return on your income. And he was contributing 3% of his salary. I said, the company's matching 3%. You get 100% return on your money the first year. Nowhere will you get that kind of return.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hesitancy for folks to where when they start working and they don't do that, they don't get that advice early enough, and they think, man, I've got to have all the income.
Right.
It's kind of like putting the genie back in the bottle to some degree.
Yeah.
Because if they wait a year and then go back and try to do that, man, that's really painful.
Yeah. And you learn to live on what you make. I mean, it's, you know, if you make $10,000, you're gonna spend it. If you make $100,000, you're gonna spend it. If you make $1 million, you're gonna spend it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you learn to save or contribute to a 401k at the earliest possible age, at the end of the day here, you've got a better nest egg.
So I'm going to dovetail off of this a little bit. This wasn't one of my planned discussions with you, but I work with a lot of folks from a client base who are either just starting or kind of in where you are, where you're in retirement. All right. The folks who are younger, when I ask them a question about retirement goals, I typically get a very conservative answer. So asking them, hey, what do you think you'll do when you get into retirement from a spending perspective?
Right.
So you have now crossed over into that retirement world. Is it what you thought it was when you were 30 or 40, or is it something different?
I feel like I've been too busy to do the things I wanted to do in retirement.
Okay.
So it is what I expected. One thing that this COVID-19 has done, though, is cut the travel. You know, we had a lot of travel. So it's the travel in the first couple of years I anticipate doing has been curtailed. So that's a difference than what I expected.
Okay.
So that's the biggest difference, I think.
So you've gotten a lot of your projects done.
A lot of the projects,
So now when all the travel restrictions will get lifted, you can just get
and
after
thinking
it.
About that, you know, I should have realized that, you know, if everybody's at home and getting their yards and the house in order, I should invest in Home Depot. You know, I mean, you can think back, you know, retrospectively, it's easier to think about where you might want to be putting your money to take advantage of the current situation.
Right. So when you first started, interest rates were in the teens.
Correct.
So the decision about buying a house was way different than what it would be today. Right. So have you noticed any patterns that you might have adjusted to as you have kind of progressed from the 80s, 90s, 2000s that made your behavior or decisions different as it regards to what you saw with interest working against you, potentially?
Yeah. I still didn't let that hinder us from purchasing a house.
Okay.
So I still, and because, you know, as it turned out, interest rates fell, the house could be refinanced at a lower level. I have, when interest rates were high, I've borrowed money to invest on occasion. And those turned out to be good ideas. But you've got to be careful about investing with borrowed money. And debt, although I'm relatively debt free now, I think the average individual with home and education is significantly different. It didn't cost me but $500 a semester in med school, and now it's costing them $60,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And so you know, there's significant differences in my outlay for my profession now versus current individuals.
Yeah, you hit that spot on. I mean, now you've got people coming out of medical school with, you know, $250,000 of medical school debt. That's a significant
liability. And that influences the specialty that individuals may tend to go into. They want to go in, if you've got that kind of debt and they're thinking of eliminating the debt, are you going to do that doing a lower paid physician profession or a higher paid?
Sure.
And so that does, and that didn't influence me because I wasn't in that situation, but it may influence individuals going forward, which I think it's a good thing that one of the medical schools up in New York has made it tuition free. So they've taken the burden off the physicians as far as what profession they may want to go into in order to pay down their medical school debt.
should allow the physician to make a more of a conscious decision yeah. about what they truly
not based on what they're going to need to yeah. pay down debt, but in where their heart really wants to lead them.
I'd say that's a big yeah. big plus yeah. for that industry. So you've got to see a lot of different, you know, market ups and downs. I know you talked a little bit about the 87 crash. Yeah. So 1982, when you first kind of got into practicing, that was at the time the worst recession in 40 years in the United States. So you and I discussed earlier, people always at the moment of something going wrong kind of look at it as this is the worst possible thing, right? So you've gotten to see 82, 87, 91, 2000, 2001, 08, 20, which who knows what yeah. the rest of this year looks yeah. like. But, you know, were there any behaviors or anything that you looked at during those times that were significant from a change in behavior or a change in thought? I know you said patience was yeah. a big deal for you yeah. earlier.
I can remember one thing that the practice did when I came to Greenville. Internal medicine was a subspecialty, if you will, rather than primary care like it is now. And we had a meeting because we were a referral-only practice, and you couldn't get into the practice unless you were referred by another physician. And with that downturn, we realized that maybe we should open it up a little bit more. I mean, there were people moving into Greenville. Industry was coming in. You know, they didn't know anybody to get a referral into our practice. So we opened it up to be a little bit more, rather than just referral only, to a more open practice.
What was the impact on the business?
I think it increased the, kept the volume steady. So, you know, in medicine, like a lot of different professions, it's relatively immune to a lot of ups and downs as far as salary and income. I think that, you know, I haven't seen a big change in that. Dad saw a big change when Medicare came in. I mean, he told me they had to hire three or four more individuals to keep up with that.
Just from the filing
yes,
and administrative
filing
stuff?
Yes, filing administrative stuff. So, yeah. you know, we didn't see that. The growth that we had in our practice was just based on volume, new physicians, and the number of personnel needed to support those physicians.
You know, it's interesting you say that the healthcare industry generally isn't affected with economic yeah. downturns, and that's pretty much been the case, except 2020,
yeah.
right? So this year in particular, you know, we've seen a lot of folks who are in that world who walked out of 2008 or 2001 kind of feeling bulletproof. Yeah. to some degree. And then, you know, 2020 hits and all of a sudden, hey, there are no elective cases going on. Yeah. You yeah. know, patient load right. has just dropped off the face of the earth for the most part. Everybody's, you know, stuck in their houses for a little while. I think it's going to be one of those aha moments yeah. for those folks to say, hey, you know what? I got to pay attention a little bit yeah. more. I'm not as bulletproof as I thought. And I think people could take that across any industry where they think that it's not ever going to be affected, because there's always that one thing that can come up and you just don't know.
2019 was a great year to retire.
For sure. Yeah.
And my own practice, the volume decreased, you know, the office was closed, but it also presented, with every crisis, I think it also presents opportunity.
That's right.
So telemedicine was just trickling into the practice. And with COVID-19, my partners were pushed into using that as the primary means of delivering healthcare. So telemedicine is a big boom now, and it probably will be in the future.
You think it'll stay?
I think it'll stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like it could be a little bit more of an efficiency piece for some type of discussions?
Yeah. And that's not, you know, I'm glad I retired when I did. I'm a hands-on, I always say I'm a dinosaur doctor. You know, I actually talk to patients, listen to them, examine them. And you still have the discussion part with Zoom and the different video conferences, but you don't have that one-on-one personal touch. You can't examine them over right. the internet.
So. Right. Yeah, something about being, you know, belly yeah. to belly kind of yeah. discussion in person is yeah. way different. Okay, so if you were still practicing right now, you start looking at this, would this have, this whole 2020 scenario, would this have changed any behaviors in what you might be doing if you were working from a finance perspective?
I'm not sure.
That's a hard question to answer.
Yeah. I would probably have more time, you know, not being the 7 to 6, you know, working, seeing patients the whole time. I would have had more time to consider investment opportunities then, just like I am now in retirement. So that may have changed. But financially, you know, all the markets, I don't tend to panic. And I think that's what you see a lot of, you know, with it's hard to predict the bear markets. You know, some of them have characteristics that you can sort of anticipate, and you can see the euphoria before a bear market and then a little downturn, and then you see that panic selling at the very end. I think this was entirely different. It was 6 weeks of panic.
But the other side, you had a lot of people who didn't know when they were going to be able to open their businesses back up,
right,
go back to work. You know, they came out of a very prosperous business, and then the next day, hey, we got to shut it off.
Doors are shut, yeah.
And I don't think a lot of business owners were prepared for that.
Yeah.
Individuals as well, right? The savings capacity and levels of most American families is not where it typically should be.
Correct.
And when you don't have any idea something's coming, kind of magnifies it.
Yeah, it would. And those individuals that are living paycheck to paycheck, the marginalized individuals are the ones that are probably most affected, both with COVID-19 health-wise and financially from being out of a job. So, you know, federal government stepping in, I think, is a great thing. Big stimulus, it's borrowed money, which puts a lot of question marks on the future. I'm
kind of how it settles.
Yep.
Are they done? Don't know. I mean, I read a very interesting article this morning that talked about how a lot of individual investors right now are buying stocks of companies that are already declared bankruptcy. And the article was positioned around why are we doing this? You know, why are people, why are they doing this? And the only synopsis that I got out of the article is that people that have been used to betting on sports for so long, there have been no sports for a while, that's kind of been their channel.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting because, you know, you look at it on its face, and are you going to go buy stock of a company that's bankrupt?
Yeah.
Probably not. But
I wouldn't. But, again, looking back historically, when Chrysler, and I don't remember which recession was, when Chrysler went under and Lee Iacocca was the chairman, 08.
Yeah.
I mean, he went to the federal government, and I think there's a Democratic president because after that he said a Republican wouldn't have given him the money, and it changing from being a Republican to a Democrat. But, you know, if you had bet on Chrysler then, you know, in a bankrupt situation, you would have made money. So I can see where some people may do that. I think the big box stores are at a disadvantage from e-commerce.
Yeah.
You know, looking toward the future, you know, where are things going? The cell phone you have there. You know, when I was elated when I had one of those big box phones with a real telephone in my car, so
the
I didn't bag. Have to a bag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
didn't have to stop and use a payphone if I was coming back from the hospital at 2 a.m.
And the calls were
calls
like $5
in,
a minute or so, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So so there's, you know, I think the technological advances that have gone on have helped a lot of individuals financially.
Yeah. Well, when you start thinking about, you know, where people are going to go from here, there's a lot of unknown. So, you know, I think to take some of the points that you said earlier, I think patience is the biggest piece.
Just
be patient. Try not to be overreactive to whatever the latest event is. It's probably not going to be the worst case scenario that it might appear to be at the time. That's kind of what I'm hearing from you after what you've experienced.
I'd agree with that. I mean, there will be downturns. If you can mitigate the losses, you know, keep cash in reserve, and when the rainy day comes, that you've got it to use, or if the opportunity comes, you've got it to use. So I think having a little bit of cash available to invest is important.
It is, and it's also it's easier said than done, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just letting it sit there is not easy.
It is not easy.
Especially when you have a mindset of wanting to go try to find a deal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you were to be, if we were sitting here talking to a group of college or medical students, what are some things that you would give them as just takeaways of, hey, if you do these two or three things, or just at least explore this, you'll thank yourself when you're 40 years down the road?
Yeah, I think that one thing is living within your means, okay. Making sure that you set aside your retirement opportunities. So 401ks offer, if somebody's offering you a match on 3%, 5%, 6% of your income, you'd be a fool not to take it. You know, investment, you just need to be consistent, and you need to follow your own instincts with advice of someone that you trust or a newsletter that you trust. So, you know, get financial advice outside of your own realm. And also say invest in the things you know. You know, don't go out there and do puts and calls and bonds or whatever else. I mean, I have no idea about that. But if you're comfortable with medical stocks or with financial stocks or commodities, then I think you just need to invest in the things you know and stick to your guns on that. you know, I can talk about mistakes you made as recently as 2012, 2013-ish. I decided to buy two different stocks. And one was a 3D printing company, and the other was called Tesla. So the 3D went up three times from what I purchased it. I mean, it had this big old spike, and it's way back down below where I purchased it now. And I sold it because I said, I'm going to sell that. Well, my financial advisor told me that he didn't think Tesla was a good idea and sold Tesla. So, you know, if you've got an idea and you really in your heart feel or think that, hey, this is going to be a good deal. So, you know, I spent probably $6,000 on both those stocks. You know, I made $6,000 on the 3D and lost $90,000 on Tesla.
So I got to ask, because I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What was Tesla trading at when you bought into it?
$23. It's 900 and something.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna throw that out.
Yeah,
there.
No, that's what I said. I mean, I know yeah. that. You know, so and actually, after I sold it, I called the fella back about a month later because it had gone. Tesla was heading back up again. I said, you know, we sold that. Is my glass half empty or half full? He said, it's totally full. You made a profit. You can't argue with that, but you can.
It's logic.
Yeah, it's logic. Yeah, but you know, you want a $1,000 profit or a $90,000 profit?
That's a hard answer, right? Oh, I have a similar story. So, when I was in college, yeah. Finishing up my business capstone class, Apple was a company that I was given to research right. and do a report on. That was the only thing I had to do for the class. Right. So we spent, you know, 3 or 4 weeks researching Apple, and this was before the iPod and all the other stuff that they came out with in the early 2000s. And when we made the presentation, Apple was trading at around $5 a share, yeah. somewhere in there. And the professor looks at us, and there was three of us. He said, all right, so would you buy their stock? And I said, of course I would. Yeah. He said, well, how much are you going to go buy? I said, well, I'm a broke college student. Yeah. I can't go buy any of it.
Yeah.
I would be curious to know how much stock he went and bought
yeah.
after that course. Because that's when I always yeah. kick myself on.
Yeah. So, you know, you can look back yeah. and you can see winners and losers. But and I think you also have to be able to lose. You have to sometimes reach out there and accept a loss and accept that as a learning experience. You know, you want to limit your losses. So I think a stop loss or a trailing stop loss is important.
Educating yourself on what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a stop loss just means if you buy a stock for $100 that you want to put a 20% stop loss on it. So if it drops below 80, if your decision to buy it was wrong and it drops below 80, then you sell it the next day.
Yeah.
And you don't look back. You accept that, okay, loss there, but if you can limit your losses and ride out your winners, generally you can wind up in a better position.
Good. All right, so here's a couple fun questions for you.
Okay.
All right, so you already gave me some of the financial yeah. mistakes with the Tesla and all that yeah. stuff. If there's anything in the world that you could buy, regardless of how much it costs, okay, what would it be?
That's a tough question. I would invest in the future. I don't know a specific stock right now, but I would bet on the 5G,
okay.
the future, the Internet of Things, 5G, the exponential increase in the amount of information that's going to travel and the connectivity.
Yeah.
Between devices. I mean, your cup there, I don't know whether that's hot or cold, but you know, you may get a text on your phone that the temperature of your coffee is low, too low, and you need to reheat it, or that your ice is melted.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I think it's amazing the number of connection, you know, driverless cars.
Yeah.
A lot of companies are putting in orders for driverless cars. I haven't seen any in Greenville, but that's an area of the future. And so I think you have to look forward, in my opinion. That's where I'd invest.
Okay.
5G, Internet of Things, driverless cars.
All right.
Maybe wind and solar power as opposed to fossil fuels.
Okay. All right. So second question is going to be, what are the most recent two things that you spent money on? And this does not have to be big ticket items. It can be just the most two recent things.
I'm trying to think of what those are. I invested in a Chinese travel industry.
Okay.
Recently.
All right.
And you know, China's population's 3-4 times the United States. Their COVID-19, they're not reporting any, whether they have any or not is another question, but
That's a whole nother discussion. Right there.
but you know, they're starting to increase their travel.
Yeah.
And this company makes money, does better than the other companies over there. So that's one thing that I got. And the other one I got, I bought Starbucks.
Okay.
It's a good solid company, and it had gotten knocked off its perch with everything else, and so
yeah.
I purchased that when it was down.
So we're not sponsored by Starbucks, but if they're listening and they would like to join in, we're happy to take you as a sponsor. all right. So from a planning takeaway, I think if there's one thing you can take from this discussion is that start early from a saving standpoint, be diligent, and have patience. Let interest work for you and avoid all the scenarios where, you know, you are at the mercy of interest working against you is what, you know, I've kind of taken away from you. And from the investing side of things, make a decision and stick with it, is what I'm hearing. So try not to be emotional and be patient. Don't have that knee-jerk reaction. There are calmer waters ahead.
They are.
Right?
Yep.
Well, you know, Bill, I appreciate you taking some time.
You're welcome.
I've enjoyed the discussion.
Yeah.
If you guys have questions, you can email us. You can find us on our website. It's fostervictorwa.com. There's a little tab. You can email us directly from there with any suggestions or questions that you have. If you want to reach out and connect with one of our wealth coaches, you can do that as well on that same website. You can follow us on Instagram at Foster Victor Wealth Advisors. Please subscribe, share this with a friend, and hopefully you will come back and hear us on the next time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Information contained in this podcast was intended for general use, not to be used as specific advice. For content tailored to your personal situation, please contact one of our wealth coaches.